Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Howdy.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Matt and I are making quite good progress in Elden Ring.
Is he going to be okay by himself?
He is. He was like, I'm just going to grind a level while you're on the show.
And then you're going to go back, he's going to be on fire.
Yeah, probably. That's accurate.
No, by the time you get back, he'll have lost all the souls he was saving up because he died.
Oh, man. That would suck.
Nah, but then I can go help him get them. That's what you do.
Oh,
shit's
man.
Happened to me so many fucking times. Jesus.
That's my least favorite aspect of games like that, is the dropping your shit, and then if you die on your way to it, it's gone for good.
Yeah, that's
how having a hard enough time, and you just took all my shit from me, and you expect me to get anywhere near where I was?
Well, that's, I have a hard time with that, too, on a personal level, so, when I play games like this solo, I very slow roll them because I get frustrated quickly. But this mod that lets me and Matt play Elden Ring seamlessly, where we connect once and we're just together forever, is dope. It turns Elden Ring into a legitimate co-op experience. And that's how we've been running the whole game. Night Rain is I think it's either procedurally generated map or it's one giant map that they use sections of. And if I'm not mistaken, it's Elden Ring Battle Royale.
No, it is the standard one large map, but you spawn in different locations on it, and it shrinks, much like a Battle Royale game tends to. However, it is you and, I think, up to four people total fighting against bosses and stuff like that to try and survive to the end as a group.
I gotta play that with really someone sometime. A friend bought it for me for my birthday. So
wait, you're not out running against other teams?
Nope.
No.
Whoa. I was unaware of that. That makes that game far more attractive to me.
Yeah, you have the standard enemies, but you also have boss-like enemies, and it's apparently really, really, really hard.
I mean,
it's the idea that you're on a semi-timer. After a certain amount of time, you have to fight the big boss, or even the individual bosses. So you're basically trying to come up with the best path to fight guys, to build your skills up, to get good weapons, to be ready for when they call you to fight the bosses.
So it's okay.
I haven't played Elden Ring myself.
I heard that playing it alone is impossible. You have to be with a team.
Yeah, that DLC actually adds at least one brand new character type as well. But you have to.
You have to what? You just cut out.
Unlock it. So there's that. Oh, you have to unlock it.
What the hell happened there?
I don't know.
We just lost you for 5 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah,
there's a new character type that gets added in that, and it's, you have to unlock it. It's hard to unlock, but it's also super OP, apparently. Huh. So, have fun with that.
That's the one I need, the OP one.
Yeah. Ain't that the fucking truth? I don't know if you can play the main game with it or not, though.
Hmm. Oh, should we start?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Everyone's here now, so.
Yeah.
Y'all ready? Did start. Damn.
No, we didn't start. We were waiting for you.
What were you talking about just now, man?
Elden Ring.
Yeah, I thought it was new DLC or something.
No, that's playing it with Matt.
Yeah.
Oh.
That DLC's been out for about a year and a half now?
Apparently this DLC got terrible reviews. I don't know why.
Because it's the time stuff and everything is why, specifically.
For DLC?
Well, yeah, as we were just talking
the game
about.
Mode. The game mode, you have a time to beat the big boss you were just talking about.
Oh, no, that's the normal game. I'm saying the DLC got negatively reviewed.
Oh, I don't know.
Isn't that part of the DLC, though?
Well, Night Reign's a standalone game.
Oh.
Oh, that one. Oh, the reason why that one got negative reviews was because it was really hard for people to actually find how to get to it in the first place, because it is hidden behind a whole bunch of shit.
That's fair. Those games can be obtuse sometimes.
Yeah, and then on top of that, all of the enemies there are stupid strong. Even the base enemies are apparently really strong, so it just kind of wiped the floor with a whole bunch of people.
Did you say they can be obtuse sometimes? They're literally built on an obtuse foundation. You have to read item descriptions to know what's going on. Like, that's kind of why I love those games, because it forces you to be a lore whore. That's why Souls games have me. Is because their lore is really good.
I don't like Dark Souls or Elden Ring specifically because of the reason. I like a lot of the other Souls like. Yeah, because you have to read and put together item descriptions, like the thousands of them that are in the game, to figure out the fucking story. You have to write a fucking dissertation, basically, and fill in all the blanks yourself, and I fucking hate that. I want to be told a fucking story.
Then watch the VOD video.
My story in every game is I've been isekai to this horrible place, and if I kill the final boss, I go home.
No, that would drive me nuts.
That's not how any of the Dark Souls games are. You never go home. You're cooked.
That's what makes the ending terrible. It's like, oh, I did it. I get to go home. No, you don't. Sit on this throne for some reason.
You must have only played Dark Souls 2. That's obvious.
Oh, no, I played, funny enough, Dark Souls 2, I think, is the one I've played the least. Though I like them all just as well. But 3, I think, 1 I played the most, then 3, then 2. And Elden Ring is his own beast entirely.
Hey, I prefer other Souls likes that aren't Dark Souls specifically. They tell you a story.
I wildly prefer the OG series.
I need something to tell me the story, because I'm not going to sit there and read all of these things and then try and piece them together. I don't have that kind of patience at all.
I don't think most people do. That's the joke. Like, I think people just like the weirdness of it all, but I don't think too many people actually do the read. Lots do, yeah, but...
But you can play visual narrative games. Like, I can't play those. I'm a lore whore, and I can't play that's just a video game book. Like, I can't do that.
Fair. A lot of people can't stand visual novels. That is very fair.
That is not my bag. I know you enjoy those. I cannot stand those. They're too slow for me.
That is fair. They are typically really slow. They're usually a slice of life things, so that's fair.
Fair. The middle ground, like games like Danganronpa or Phoenix Wright, where like, here's a narrative, but then here's some part where you have to participate.
I'll tell you what, this may shock some of you, but I've only ever played the original Phoenix Wright, and I did very much enjoy that game. It's just I didn't spend a whole shit ton of time with my original DS, so I didn't really carry on with the franchise.
Do you have a PC to play computer games on?
Yeah. That's how I'm playing Elden Ring. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't the Ace Attorney games on Steam?
I think all of them are now, yeah.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
You should get them there.
Capcom put collections out of like 2-3 at a time.
Once I get a job, I will do that, actually.
Yeah, because... That one, I think you'd also like Danganronpa, as Purnell brought up, is probably also going to be up your alley then.
That one might be a little too anime for me.
I just like so many people off. It's like, well, they did exactly what I was expecting it to do. Like, it's one of those weird games. I reviewed it for this show, so I got the ending before the general public got it. And I just remember coming on this show being like, so many people are going to hate this ending. I love it. And I met multiple people that said exactly, this game is terrible. They ruined everything. I was like, no, they didn't. I think it's perfect.
Oh, you would.
I loved it.
You would. You like pineapple on pizza too, don't you?
Yeah, but that's good.
Fuck do.
Yeah, Trill, I'm with you, homie. I'm with you on that one.
So good. I don't understand the hate.
Yeah, I don't understand the hate either. It's quite yummy. Well,
being blasphemous. It's what you two are.
Blasphemy to it.
Ready for this, Purnell?
Literally anything.
Purnell, you ready for this?
Sure.
Pepperoni, bacon, pineapple, jalapeno. Come at me. Come at me.
I would eat it. Slap some mandarin oranges on there while you're at it.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Oh, some roasted garlic clove. Oh, baby.
Adam, what the hell is your weird ass Steam name right now?
Mine?
Yeah.
Pepperoni pineapple tone.
No. I'm one of the baseball players from the legendary NES Japanese game that was translated poorly. I'm Anatoly Smorin.
All right. I knew it was something weird. I know you can't just have like a normal Coltrane. What do you want, baby? Why are you climbing?
I mean, for the longest time, my name was AOL Instant Messenger. Because I thought it was funny to kill people in Call of Duty with the screen name of AOL Instant Messenger. And then for a really long time, it was Sir Honkington III. Because me and Ben and Dak, and I think Huey was a part of that, we all made goose-themed Steam names while we were playing something as a group.
Was it any way
related to the annoying goose game?
Yeah, well, Sir Honkington III stuck around for a long time. And actually, Anatoly Smorin is probably on its way out soon.
Oh,
I don't know where I'm going to go yet. I haven't decided. But, yeah.
Anatoly Smorin.
Yep.
I really hope after every game of Call of Duty you played, you told the opposite team goodbye from American Online.
Goodbye.
Oh, no, I didn't, but that's so smart. Oh, what a missed opportunity on my part. Okay.
Yes, that is extremely missed. I used it well, so I immediately thought of that without a second.
Just get that sound clip and play it over the headset.
I haven't thought about that soundbite in 30 years. Oh, my gosh. That's funny. No, you're right. Good call out. That's a missed opportunity on my part.
You should just get that screen name back.
Oh, damn it. Joe, you're a menace.
It's on sale, man. I couldn't let it go.
Thank you.
And I had Steam credit in my wallet, so
you're very, like $5. You're a very kind man.
Very nice.
I apparently now own the games we were just talking about.
Ace Attorney.
Ace Attorney, yeah.
Very nice. It was on sale from 30 to 10, and then I had Steam wallet credit, so it was like $5.
Well, no, you recognize this song, but I can't remember the game name, and it's not Faces Loaded. It's something else.
Oh, hold on.
Sleeve McDykel.
Yeah, that's it. Sleeve McDykel. That was Ben for a while.
But what was the game, though? It wasn't Bases Loaded. I'm assuming you said it was an NES, Nintendo-published game?
Yeah.
Was it RBI Baseball?
Maybe that was it. So I'm looking at this image now. It's just a list of all the names, but no one in the comments are referencing what the actual game title is because everyone just should know, I guess.
The game's called Fighting Baseball All-Stars.
Fighting Baseball. Ah, okay. Oh, geez.
Or no, Fighting Baseball, and it's on the SNES.
Oh, SNES even.
Yeah, no, I was wrong.
I thought that was NES. Wow.
Wade McDykel.
What are some of the other quality names? I know Bobson Jones was one, wasn't it?
Todd Gonzalez, Tim Sandow, Mike Truck. Ray McGriff.
Yeah, dude. Oh, God.
These are some gems.
Ridiculous names.
Glenn Allen Mixon.
Carl Dandleton.
Great.
Willie Dustus. Oh, man. Willie Dustus was a good one. We used that one for a while, too.
Time for Willie Dustus.
Justice Willie from Dustus.
Ray McScriff.
such a great name. I need somebody just save a screenshot of that name list just to have it.
This is wildly
available on the internet.
Episode image for the episode. The YouTube image for the episode. Will just be those names.
Dude, do it. That's good.
I wonder if I could sneak our names in there, just like edit in like Joe Cam. It's like Sleeve McBuckle and then Joe Cam. Like,
those are both
stupid names.
Cover up, cover up like the worst of the not of the like the fake ones, like the ones that aren't funny, and then just put our names in there. Yeah, that'll work.
Beautiful.
The official cast.
Oh man, so that was like all of our bullshit in time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh wait, did you start? Holy crap!
No, I didn't start, but I'm keeping it all anyway.
Reviews for the most part.
Yeah, I'm just keeping all of it. Whatever. What's up, everyone? This is the SML podcast. We're fucking 18 minutes into the episode.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask a general question to you guys, and I'm curious what your takes are. Where are your thoughts on the Steam Machine? I have three ages to decide if I want it or not, and I'm angry.
Waiting till the world market settles down before I purchase hardware. That's my general consensus on hardware
now. So you're just never buying hardware again. Okay.
No, because OpenAI just announced, or I should say leaked, had their profits leaked, and not making any money. They spent $26 billion, and they lost $13 billion in the
space. Yeah, that's been known for over a year now.
Yeah, no, they're finally learning in real time what we said 10 years ago, that they can't spend their way out of this problem. It's not something, the technology is not there yet. It's not a problem they can spend past.
Good.
This bubble's going to pop and a lot of things are going to change. So
I would love to say it's going to pop, but it's one of the people who makes some of the components literally completely just left altogether.
No, I know. But somebody last night, was it last night? No, it was two nights ago while we were watching. I heard this news while we were watching the pay-per-view the other night. And our friend Steven actually put it really well and very simply. All of these investors that are investing in these AI companies like OpenAI are all dumping tons and tons of millions and billions with a B dollars into this project. And they're going to want return on investment soon. It's been 5 years and there's been zilch, only request for more income.
Yep.
When the people that bankroll this shit finally have had enough, and I feel like that's coming soon, because the bubble's already getting shaky. We all see it. It's not popping yet. We know that.
I think things are going to get really ugly with Microsoft's fiscal year changeover.
Yep.
Because they're talking about a bloodbath of layoffs, and
yep,
there's union saying, listen, we're the ones doing the work and the executives are the ones fucking up, spending billions on AI and losing money. Why are we getting laid off?
I literally have friends that work for ZeniMax Online Studios that are under the impression that they're going to be laid off because of the internet news, and no one from management has told them otherwise. So, like, they're all basically in limbo until whatever happens.
Yeah, and Microsoft might be, like, really kind of boned, because you have to remember, they lost a fuck ton of money in like the span of 6 months because they screwed up by putting their AI making updates for their Windows updates, and it screwed up a whole bunch of people's computers, and they lost a lot of investors from that, and I wouldn't be shocked if they got sued for it. They did another round of updates with AI, and it bricked some of the computers. I'm sure there's probably a lawsuit about that somewhere, too. Like, they did so badly that there was a fucking launch of a spaceship that was put off or something, or maybe it was in something that was already in space, something like that. and it was using the new version of the Windows that had fucked up already. And they
That was already out. That was out. That was okay. that was a live mission.
I couldn't remember if they were trying to launch or if they had already succeeded and it fucked up after they were already out there.
Live mission.
Yeah, and then they keep pushing the AI that they have openly admitted, because they have to, that no one wants, that most of their users actively refuse to interact with and stop using stuff that it's put in. And they've lost a lot of investors because of that too. I think they ended up losing like $1 trillion worth of investments and stuff in like 6 or 8 months, something like that.
It's all coming home to roost.
It's all AI stuff, and and the guy who's running it's still pushing it. I don't know why he's doing that. That's just like you already put the noose around your own neck with $1 trillion of lost investment money.
If we invest another $500 billion into AI, that could tell us how to unfuck ourselves, right?
Not even a little. And I'll tell you what, I am proud of the general public and how they're handling all of this stuff, because while generative AI is the devil incarnate and stealing and raping and pillaging artists left, right, and center, AI, like language learning models that help research and the, you know, technologies and stuff like that, is all very good, but it doesn't require near the fucking power that all of these, like Claude and ChatGPT impersonations, you know, all the variants thereof, and all of the image creators and the video creators, all of those are the ones that not only harm people, but are requiring all these ridiculous data centers and so on and so forth.
I'm mad because they're building a data center like 5 miles from my house.
And now
the local water company, like out of nowhere, wants to install new meters for everyone.
That could work
either way, though. While the suspicion and the probability of it being nefarious is probably true, there is a chance that they're updating yours to make sure that when that place gets built, they're getting billed specifically and you're getting billed specifically on their new system. So they're not relying on meter maids to run around, you know, doing meter checks.
Yeah.
That's wishful thinking.
I'm happy with where I live for once in my life, 'cause it's a highly, red area, and the city brought it to people's attention. They were like, hey, we're thinking of allowing this company to build the data center, and everyone was so against it, they put it completely on hold to get more people's opinions to figure out, oh shit, did we just fuck up?
I know there's lots of cities of allowing that are
they were trying
data centers, and
they were talking about one in like just outside of Hanover where I live. Mm-hmm. And as they were talking about it, it pissed the locals off so much they ran the idea out of town.
Yeah, I really would like to see that done everywhere, because data centers have already ruined 3 different places' drinking water.
Our area is already seeing infrastructure problems with water and power because they're building too many houses. If a data center came in, we'd be cooked.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So, that's why the locals went wild.
We've been lucky so far, but I'm genuinely concerned about the idea that people are so short-sightedly stupid that they will complain about why won't we let a data center in under one breath, while on the other breath complain about why are our electric bills so freaking high? Can't someone do anything about that?
Dude, so you're speaking to the choir. Not only did they push the data center out of town, which is a great idea, there's also a huge push to remove fluoride from our drinking water right now. And I'm like, y'all are a different brand of stupid. Like, holy Toledo.
Well, my state's trying to get rid of property tax, and everyone's like, let's do it. I'm like, what the fuck are you saying? We want that so rich people actually pay some money. What the fuck?
Yeah, but they don't. That's the thing. Why have it if they're just going to avoid it anyway?
Like, don't get me wrong. I'd love to avoid property tax in the sense of I literally own the house, but the downside is we need civic money from something. And a lot of it is coming from those taxes, so it's, I don't know. And like Adam said, the rich people are already skirting that shit anyway.
I don't think they skirt property tax, because I don't legal to do.
Oh, most of the things
so they still do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. When has legality come in the way of people and their money? Are you kidding?
Fair.
Especially in this day and age. Holy
loopholes and the ability to say you gave X amount of dollars to this charity that offsets what your property taxes would be or some book. They find ways. Find ways that we would never understand because we don't have access to that information or that way to hoard our money.
So, hey, we're a video game podcast. We should probably talk about video games.
I agree.
So today we're going to talk about Wall Street Kid, How to Fuck the System, brought to you by...
But, I mean, that's kind of related to video games.
We got some reviews we got to tackle. Should we get into these?
We need to let
Adam get back to his Elden Ring.
I wasn't going to say it, but now that you have, I'm fiending hard.
I know you are.
I've been playing that damn game for the last, ever since the day it came out, and I only beat one major boss, and I put 120 hours into it.
Jesus.
Oh, we are, Matt, you know Matt PA, friend of the show, Matt PA. Him and I are doing a co-op mod, and it's basically co-op Elden Ring from start to finish. You don't have to, like, reconnect every time you fight something.
I might be misremembering the guy, but if we talk about the guy that, like, if I'm thinking about the right guy, how do you play that with him and not piss yourself laughing every 5 minutes?
Oh, no, that's...
I'm not here. I never showed up. None of this ever happened.
Yes! Dude, hell yeah. No, Matt's one of my best friends on planet Earth, and I will be in voice chat with him daily if possible. He is one of the funniest people alive.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. How do you play games with him? How do you not piss yourself laughing every 5 minutes playing with him?
Me, him, and Huey in a room is lethal.
What other clips do we have?
You can touch it if you'd like.
All the time he comes on this damn show, I just kind of settle. I just settle in. I don't even talk. I just don't want to just start laughing at the background.
Play Osprey Milk, and then we'll get to it.
Oh Jesus, Osprey. Yes, scroll to these.
Osprey Milk is the best.
Yeah, and I know you have that one because I've heard that before.
Yeah, I know. I'm terrible at finding things.
Well, you only have 7 Discord tokens.
Tony Khan will pay for his milk.
Oh my god, I've never heard that one.
You never heard that one?
No, that one's awesome.
Tony Khan will pay for his milk.
Oh my god,
I just love it. It's a matter of fact statement that he will pay for his milk.
Dude, you gotta play that tomorrow in chat. That one's legendary. Ooh. Holy crap, that's funny.
We better get you milk ready.
Oh no.
Milk.
I'm breaking Adam. I love it.
That's amazing.
Milk.
Matt, what do you think of all this?
That's a moment from Elden Ring, Bruno. That happened while we were playing Elden Ring.
What?
We got stuck between a rock and a hard place, and he went into complete madness.
maybe if I played him, I'd have beaten the damn game by now. God damn.
That's fucking funny.
All right. Good shit.
Yeah.
Reviews. Let's get to it. Let's get to it.
I gotta get back to him.
He's so lonely. Reviews. First game to talk about tonight, Exo Rally Championship, developed by Expletive, published by Future Friends Games, released June 7th on Steam for $24.99. Exo Rally Championship is the galaxy's most dangerous off-road racing event, remote, unexplored, extreme exoplanetary rally. Master a brutally realistic racing sim and fight for every second gained on your quest to become a champion. Adam, tell us about your time playing Exo Rally Championship.
So, this game was... I have mixed feelings about this game. I'm going to be honest from the jump, but we're going to go right into the positives because I like to start things off positive. Okay. Like the synopsis has let you know, you have taken the wheel of an exo racing machine, basically an off-road buggy built for racing on other untraversed, completely terraformed by any stretch planets. They are raw. They are how they are found in space, and we are racing on them. And by we, I mean it's more of a single player, but like a traditional rally game, you do things in stages, and then you compare stage times, and then after you have all of the different stages on the planet, you then combine all the times, and the person with the fastest time obviously wins. The design of this game is really cool. It's a very, very, very pretty game. The controls are interesting. It's your standard racing game controls, with the exception of the right thumbstick is not what you typically would use it for in camera control. It's actually used as like a booster system. As you could imagine, an off-road rally game where you're traversing planets across the galaxies, the planets aren't exactly smooth. And as you're going through these checkpoints, you'll find yourself bouncing and bobbing throughout all different kinds of obstacles, be it jumps, be it avoiding trees or mountains or pillars or whatever else you might find on said planets. There are kind of like alien structures that you kind of, at least to the point that I've gotten, that you kind of going around. But for the most part, humans haven't been here, and you're simply following a point of light beam checkpoints. Getting back to those controls, the right thumbstick is those boosters, and when it says that it's an extreme simulation, they mean it. Using these booster controls is not easy. Every different kind of car, every different kind of rover chassis, they all have different kind of maneuverability or handling, making the learning curve to figure out how to use these boosters in an effective manner while still trying to stay on track and get a good time is incredibly difficult. I struggled massively with this portion of the game. I found myself having to do like planet stages a couple of times to get a time that I was happy with. I wasn't really too focused on where, because like I would finish and I would be first in like the race, but like I would, half of my car would be damaged, and I felt like I did 3 backflips and landed on my lid 5 times causing said damage. Because I'm having such a hard time with the thruster controls. That being said, there's only really one game mode to speak of, and that's the, like I was referring to, the time trials by stages. There's no online play with, it's a single player game, so the really only online thing that you can do is share times with friends. The cool thing about it, though, is you can also share your seed with your friends of the track or the planet that you have been racing. While the planets are procedurally generated, it does have the option to spit out a seed for you. So you can give your friend the seed that you have a really good time on. You can give them the seed and your time, and then they can race that exact same race, even through the procedural generation, because obviously you have the seed. And you can set times with your friends that way. I made it through a couple of the planets in my time.
Yay!
The other thing that I noticed in my progression was there's not really a big forefront to the music. The sound design of this game really kind of lets the weather systems and the motor and like the damage and the comms and stuff like that take super precedent over the music. I feel like with Exo Rally in like the menuing and stuff, there was some music to be heard, and in the game, there's some music to be heard, but I feel like an interplanetary Exo Rally game should have some kind of crazy techno soundtrack that like keeps you on the edge of your seat. It kind of leans a little too heavy into the simulation, in my opinion, in that regard. I see what they're doing. They're trying not to break like the sim immersion and make it too arcadey. But it's weird, in my opinion, to have a simulator, a hardcore simulator for something that doesn't exist. Because what are we actually simulating here? Yeah. So, in my opinion, as a racing game fan and as a guy that does actual hardcore like driving sims, and I love arcade racing. Like, I have played to completion Forza Horizon 6. That game is friggin' incredible. I had an absolute blast with that video game. So I really, truly appreciate both sides of the racing game world. And I don't know where Exo Rally is trying to be, because it feels like an arcade game that is trying to be a hardcore simulator based on a pretend thing. And that's really hard for me as the player to wrap my own head around. Maybe that's just me not... maybe I just don't have the ability to do suspension of disbelief four or five times over itself.
As a pro wrestling fan.
You know what I mean? That, and we're also in an era of gaming that one game mode is a tough break. Like, no online play, okay, I get it. But, like, have some kind of diversity to... I'm in a third person cam following the buggy vehicle on a procedurally generated planet going between light beams. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's the whole game. And we were doing stuff like that PS2 era. So like, this is like a super, super, super pretty, absolutely gorgeous PS2 type game, and that's a rough break, in my opinion. I kind of had a bit more expecting going into this, but honestly, it, for what it delivers it pretty okay, but there should definitely be some side dishes with that main entree, in my opinion. That's how I feel about it.
All right, well, are you ready to talk price on this one?
Sure.
It clocks in at $24.99. What are your thoughts?
$24.99. It's obviously not priced as a AAA title. We can appreciate that. That's a good start. I would say if you'd like to check out an oddball racing game that does have highlights, you know, you can build your racers. There's all kinds of adjustment you can do. It's very customizable. If you're into rally racing specifically, check this out, because it's staged rallies. It's built. You'll be in very familiar territory. But I would wait until this game went on sale. I'm not saying don't buy it. It hasn't. There's got to be an audience for this game. There has to be. Racing games are great. If you're a super rally nerd, when this game goes on sale, pick it up and give it a shot. It's definitely a rally game. I couldn't get past the thruster controls, but I'm also a dork who plays Elden Ring with a friend, because playing it by himself is too intimidating. So take that for what you will, folks.
Sounds good. Adam, always a pleasure having you on. We will let you get going so that you can return to your Elden Ring.
Well, thank you kindly. And yeah, it's good to be on. It's good chatting with everybody. And I will catch you all next time.
Very good. Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
I don't think... I was going to try to think of something, like, really inspirational to, like, go play Elden Ring. But, like, we just killed Riker, for anybody following along that has played that game. And it took us a couple of tries, and getting that kill felt real good. Killing that snake-faced jerkwad felt real good. So,
one day, someday, in 2032, I too
remember snake man. That when you team up with your friends through mods on the internet, you too can accomplish your dreams.
Accomplish great things.
Thumbs up emoji.
I'll play some techno at the end for you.
Oh, hell yeah. Play that song Jam, J-A-M-N, by George and Jonathan. That's a banger.
Will that get me a copyright strike?
Oh.
That's always what I worry about.
I don't know. I have played it on Twitch before, but that was before Twitch went wild. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. I might do a video game techno. Like, are you a Blind fan? FF Music DJ fan?
No, Blind is good. Blind's real good.
Cool. We will do some Blind then.
Hell yeah. Radical one. All right, man.
Cool.
I will catch y'all later.
Sounds See you, good. Buddy.
Tell Matt we said hi.
Oh, will do. Absolutely. Later.
Laters. Moving on. Next game to talk about is Death Bulge, Battle of the Bands, developed and published by Death Bulge and Five Houses. Released June 30th, Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch, and PS5 for $19.99. Melt the face, slap a bass, or kiss a drum in this RPG about three idiot musicians. Upon signing up to a perfectly normal Battle of the Bands contest for a bit of fun, Faye, Ian, and Briff are cursed with an unusual power and find themselves sealed to a horrible fate. Surely there's a way to get out of it. There has to be. Even it means working together. Gross. Aki, what's Death Bulge?
Okay. So this is a turn-based action game where you use music to kill people. Basically, everybody's bards. It's great. So you start off as Faye and her friends, who is a duo band, have decided to come and wake you up and are like, there's going to be a battle of the bands. You need to get your band back together and come fight against us, because that'd be really cool. And apparently, you know, it doesn't take anything to force you to do things. So you're like, okay, and you go sign up your other two bandmates who you haven't spoken to, at least one of them in years, and the other one, whilst you live with them, apparently y'all aren't super on speaking terms. So, yay!
Beautiful.
Immediately after that, you start trying to gather both these team members, and you find out by accidentally knocking one of them unconscious that your music now hurts people. Yay! We are now true bards.
Before we get too much further, can I just point out this game has one of my favorite recurring jokes I've ever seen in a video game, and that is
the door.
Kicking doors down and having them embedded in the wall.
And they stay there, too. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, there's 81 of them, by the way.
Yeah, and you gotta kick them all for an achievement.
Yep. So it turns out that you and everyone else who joined this are kind of, sort of, a little bit cursed. Now your music hurts people, and it's done because the Battle of the Bands is unknowns to most of the people, but it's a till the death style musical combat. So, yay! You immediately, with your groups, go out and you're like, let's stop this, because I don't want to have to kill my friends, basically. And it puts you against the various demons and other individuals from around, just trying to get through this and survive, while some of them are trying to kill you, others are trying to find their own way through this, often involving trying to kill you. And yeah, it's a fun little game. I think I put around 30 hours into this. And
you did run into some achievement issues, yes?
Yeah, three of the achievements, for some reason, they didn't pop. And it was for collecting all of an item for each one of them. Because a bunch of the achievements in this game are collect everything of this type. For instance, we had kick all the doors. There's 81 of them. That one worked. That was great. There's one for different patches that you can get, and you can equip one eventually to your outfit, and they give you different bonuses and stuff. That one broke on me. There's one for getting all the different merch, and merch ends up being, you know, items that you can use in the middle of battle, like healing items or stuff that gives you, they call it hype, but it's basically magic, stuff like that. And in this game, instead of buying like just buying like a whole bunch of this item, instead you have a stack is what it's called, and every item takes a certain amount of stack. So once you buy the item, you can use it until you run out of stack if you want. So that's really interesting. But that one requires you to get all 21 of those, I think it is, and I have them, and it broke on me. And then there's a few others as well, and another one of them broke on me, because I have three of them that broke on me, and all three of them are collect everything achievements.
Hopefully they could address that and take care of that and fix those. A lot of companies lately have been quick to jump on fixing achievements because they know how pissed people get over achievements not popping.
Yeah, and I really hope when they fix it, they just set it to where it looks again for everything instead of...
I'm sure they will. They know what they're doing.
A lot of places don't actually do that. A lot of places turn around, they're like, okay, now we made sure that it's going to check this properly as you get them. Replay the whole game now. And it's like, I just make it to where it checks when I log in next time. What the fuck?
Well, you program a game.
I would if I knew how. These people do know how, and I've seen other devs do it. So it's not like it's impossible. So I know you can do it. They need to do it that way. It makes more sense.
Pernell, did you play Death Bulge?
Yeah, ways back. It's a great game.
What did you think of this one?
I think it's fantastic. So basically, I like the job system that it has. I like the humor in it, like you mentioned earlier regarding the door kicking and stuff like that, and a lot of just the general commentary that happens throughout the game. When I talked about it before, I recommended it wholeheartedly, and I stand by that. It's a good game.
Well, Aki, what do you think? Do you agree with Pernell on this?
In history too.
Yes, I do. It's pretty fantastic. And about the job system, I super like that because you get a whole bunch of abilities, and you can put any of these abilities as your class ability, and that changes your class to whatever that is. A bunch of these are, you know, in the same class. So you might have, you know, for your guitarist, because it's a guitarist, a drummer, and I don't remember what Ian is. I think he's actually another guitarist. I think he's a bass guitarist. But it actually changes their visual look. So you might have like a goth, and there's like three abilities. Any one of them that you put into the class changes their look into being a goth look. And all of them have a whole bunch of different ones, and they don't always share them in between. Like, I think... two of them have like a goth look, I believe. I think it's Biff and Faye have goth looks, but Ian doesn't. But he has these other ones as well, and it completely changes how the character looks both during the fight, when you're just running around, because you can switch between the characters as you're running around. Each one of them has a little special ability that they can use. Faze allows you to dash real fast. Ian,
I like how we were getting close to wrapping up this review and you're diving right back into more review.
Yeah. That's because you tried to do it too damn quick. Get over it. Ian flexes his muscles, which stun enemies, and then Biff turns invisible because he's a loser. And yeah, I really like how they change their visual look. It's fucking awesome. Okay, you can continue.
No. If you got more to say, say it.
No, that was it. That's one of the...
Kick your fucking door down. Death Bulge, Battle of the Band. Death Bulge, Battle of the Bands, clocks in at $19.99. Aki, what's your verdict?
Even though this has broken achievements currently, I'm still going to say that this is a buy it, because this was really fun. I like the story. I like the characters. Love the visuals. It's real funny. I'm totally for this, and I have a hard time thinking of anyone that this isn't for, realistically speaking. It is a fantastic game. Just maybe not suited for little kids, because they do use some foul language.
It's rated T, so...
fair.
Oof. There you go. Next up, Rise of the Tomb Raider 20-year celebration, developed by Crystal Dynamics, published by Aspyr, released June 9th on the Switch 2 for $29.99. Discover the secrets of Kitsa and survive the forces of Trinity on Lara's Siberian tomb raiding expedition. Our fierce explorers, back to encounter the unknown, embark on Lara's most treacherous journey through Siberia to the lost city of Kits and unlock the mysteries of the past. There is no turning back. Pernell, tell us about your time with the Switch 2 release of Rise of the Tomb Raider 20-year celebration.
Well, as with usually is the case with me and a lot of games on this show, I bought this game when it first came out. This is my first time playing it. Big shock, right? But it's kind of sad that I waited this long to play it. Or is it? I don't know. Because the game itself is actually quite good. But they also provide you with pretty much all the DLC that the game had back during its time of original release. So I guess if there's a time to dive into it, may as well dive into it with all the content. But as it stands, what is this game? Or more specifically, how does the game feel as you play it? Well, it's an action-adventure game, and it takes place during those early periods. There was like a trio of games that were meant to be the pre-Tomb Raider Lara days, where she was coming into her own. This comes after the first game, which one could describe as being borderline torture porn with how the game beat the living tar out of Lara, and puts her in a situation where she's a bit more capable and able to handle herself, which is good because she's in a pretty sticky predicament in regards to trying to track down an ancient treasure and outwit an organization known as Trinity and basically restore her father's good name after previously kind of being a laughingstock for not coming through on a discovery. The game is handled by having you explore a multitude of different environments. All such environments are linked together by way of, you heard it, bonfires, where you can settle up shop at them. And then using the fast travel between different bonfires in one area, or going back to old areas and the bonfires that exist in those.
Bonfire. Why would you want to do this? This is a Dark Souls game now, right?
That's right. When Lara dies, she drops all of her guns, and you have to go back and pick them up. No, not like that. This game is actually extremely lenient in regards to how death is handled, and I appreciate that. In fact, I would describe this game as being the Ubisoft Explorathon, but done well, because some people, I mean, they're always generally done well, but I feel like a lot of people get burned out on them sometimes, and as a result, they get a bum rap because they use the formula very frequently in their games.
Miraculite says, so it sounds like this isn't Uncharted territory.
It's funny, too, both because the pun is hilarious, and also because it's almost like these games bring it full circle. With Tomb Raider being Tomb Raider, then everybody being like, Uncharted is just Tomb Raider with a dude in a lot of Indiana Jones jokes. And then Tomb Raider was like, what if we could be Uncharted, which was like Tomb Raider, but a little bit of a fusion between the two, more so with a Lara Croft touch. And that's what you get here.
Hey, Matt, Matt, what did you think of that joke?
God, she's not even here. I'm laughing. Jesus Christ, he should be comedy. I'm not going to say stand-up, because stand-up is a very particular thing. He might be like, I can't do stand-up, but something that will make people laugh, because he's got the touch. But as you're exploring these different environments, you will come across a multitude of animals, which you can hunt using, you know, hunter skills, like using a bow and arrow, sneaking up on them, stabbing them, and then carving them for parts, which can be used to craft weaponry such as ammunition, such as arrows. In addition to that, you can explore and come across a variety of different caves and tombs, which, for my opinion, the tombs themselves are the best part of the game, because they're optional, but they kind of feel more like puzzle rooms or escape rooms, where you have to figure out the solution to get to the big treasure at the middle. So they're self-contained as well, and you can come back to them as you see fit if you feel as though you can't handle the puzzle. But to my answer to that is, of course you can handle the puzzle. That's the best part of the game, are the damn tombs. So they're all worth exploring. The map is kind of bare as far as letting you know where these different things are, but as you explore on the map, on the actual environment, you might come across special item maps that will give you more information on what collectibles exist and where they are. You can get money, which can be used to buy items from friendly merchants you might come across on the map. And then, of course, dealing with the usual suspects being humans with guns who want you dead. Because even in the early stages, apparently Lara was an absolute GI. And she's going around just about murking people. And the game gives you a fairly decent arsenal of weaponry with which to do it. You start out with a basic setup. You get a bow and arrow, which has very little killing power, but it still gets the job done when you need it to, especially stealthily. But eventually you'll come across pistols and SMGs and shotguns, the usual boutique. Much of the time, though, you don't just get the weapon. Instead, what will happen is you'll be asked to search around and locate chests that contain parts to weapons. And when you get all the parts, you construct the actual armament and you can use it. And armaments can be upgraded using items found throughout the map, such as the aforementioned animal parts and bits that you can find from dismantling boxes and trees and all kinds of scavengeable goods. The one thing worth mentioning here, which might come as a shock to people who didn't play this before and are coming into it new, because it was a shock to me, is that when you get your first pistol and get to a bonfire with the expectation, I'm going to upgrade this gun, you'll discover that the DLC, like I mentioned earlier, is all in, which means they give you access to quite a few pistols, as opposed to just your starting pistol. Fortunately, however, upgrades across these pistols are universal, and that would go for other guns that are in the same family as well. So if you feel as though you can't decide on what you want to put all your resources into, fear not, because with the exception of unique to specific weapon upgrades, your enhancements will carry over across all of them. So you can just upgrade to your heart's content. And there are, of course, other things like skill points you can earn by discovering, let's say, treasures, or by finding ancient scripts to translate, which then also in turn increases your proficiency in various languages, which will allow you to read other things later. Thankfully, I search and grab everything, so I never had an issue with that, but that's part of the fun, I guess, of making big bars go up and numbers go woo. So there's a lot of enjoyment to be had here. And as you get other abilities, you will be able to traverse back to areas you've already been to get items that you couldn't access before, therefore completing the map. And after each bonfire, they give you a decent checklist letting you know of all the things you have yet to find. So this is very much a game where you're intended, though you don't have to, you're intended to find everything each area has to offer, thereby putting a massive check mark on completing the map. There are a multitude of multiplayer elements too, but to be perfectly honest, I didn't bother with those things because I don't come to Tomb Raider for multiplayer. I know this is a review, but I only can review what I care about, and I don't care about multiplayer. But the things I can tell you is that it allows you to go back to old areas and use these cards you can acquire by earning in-game points that can be spent on them to create modifiers and enhancements to increase or decrease the challenge of these things. And then when you explore and complete the levels anew, you'll earn points, which will add you to a leaderboard. It might be a matter of like traversing different specific pathways to get items that will give you points, or accomplishing specific objectives, that sort of thing. But if you're the type that wants to be proficient at completing a level in a very specific and fashionable manner and showing your friends numerically how much better you are at that than they are, there you go. And to be fair to them for saying this, I could see potential here because as a person who used to love beating Super Meat Boy and getting better times than my friends, I could see this as being a more intricate, you know, challenge to pass back and forth with a 3D environment. So, oh no, I've been rambling about this game a lot, and I'm pretty sure I've come over the threshold of time that I should be talking. But what I want to say in general is that I slept on this game. I kind of wish I hadn't, because it is a lot of fun. I will admit that the gunfights can drive you crazy at a certain point, not because they're bad, but because I want to get back to exploring the tombs and exploring for collectibles. But they are still fun nonetheless. And in turn, I genuinely can't find a negative to this game. I like everything about it, and I can wholeheartedly recommend it, doubly so to folks who've never played it before.
Very good. Clocks in at $30. What do you think?
Easy buy. Go on, pick it up. Get that portable on the go, but also dockable on your TV experience.
Rock on. Moving on. Next game is Dimhaven, The Lost Source. Developed by Zadbox Entertainment, published by Blue Brain Games and Zadbox Entertainment, released June 23rd on Steam for $25.99. Are you ready for an adventure, challenges, exploration, and puzzles in a narrative-driven experience? Pick up your camera and test your wits in this first-person mystery by the team behind Quirin. Think. Aki, what's Dimhaven?
Okay, this is a first-person puzzle game, much like Myst or Quirin, which was a Myst-like that came out a handful of years ago. And yeah, in this, you play as Emily, and you have gone to Dimhaven to find your uncle Zach. He and you were close, and he just suddenly stopped replying to messages and stuff about 6 months ago, so you decided to chase after him and figure out what the fuck went down. And let me explain to you how weird this game is. You start the game as Emily talking to somebody in a vehicle. You don't see anything, you just hear them talking. And she's talking to this little old lady, and then you hear the person on talking over the speakers. I assume a bus driver, because it makes sense. Maybe a train, who knows. Hey, we're at this stop. And the next thing you know, you're diving through the fucking air. Because apparently it was a plane, and it was time for you to jump out, as this little old lady is apparently, it's not her stop yet. The fuck? and you parachute down to this platform, you miss it, and land in the ropes that they put up to keep people safe as they apparently jump to their near death to get to this location. That's like the first, like, minute of the game. Congratulations. That's the world we're in now, motherfucker.
God.
And the game warns you immediately that it is very hard, and it lives up to that. I actually had to look up a walkthrough for some of the solutions in here, and thankfully that person actually explained the logic, and I got it for all of but one of the puzzles where I was like, "You've explained this to me, and I still don't know. I still don't understand how the hell you got this answer." But okay, this is what you say the answer is. I'm just gonna agree to it with you because I still don't know how you got it. So you are tasked with first just getting into the island, because right now you're in the area where you're supposed to show your visa and stuff, like an airport, and no one's here, nobody, so everything's starting to fall apart here, and you have to find your way in, and to get into everything, you actually have to open up the buildings so you can get paperwork filled out, since there's no one there to, you know, give you the paperwork, let you fill it out, and then do what they need to do. You now have to do it, and that means breaking into all these places. and you have to fix things around because it's been a while apparently since someone was last in this dump. And yeah, you get through that section, and then you're not actually getting to a town. Now you're trying to figure out how to get up to this mansion that's up on a hill that belonged to your ancestors. And you have to figure out how to get this this lift fixed so you can get up there. And the puzzles range from like, oh, you need to find coins so you can get your passport back from the seagull that stole it off of you, to, hey, you have to figure out what code you have to write on your temporary visa in order to get let in past, basically, customs, I guess is what this is supposed to be. And you have to figure out actually how to write the, like, 6 to 8 digit long password thing to actually get this done. And you have a choice of all 10 numbers for every one of these, so you actually have to figure it out. And that gets a little complicated. To, oh, here's an electrical puzzle, you have to figure out how to align all of these different lengths electrical things that plug into other stuff according to what this note says, and it's only using like a letter and then a number, and that's how everything is, and you just have to figure out where everything goes based on that. To, now you have to figure out how to set these masks on this different place and arrange lights and move lights to different areas in order to open the next door. The puzzles are all over the place. The one that I never figured out, even after seeing the solution, walked me through the solution, I still didn't get it, was you had to open certain cupboards and stuff in order to be able to open a door. And you had to use that based on this diagram that I still, for the life of me, do not understand. And it's like, if you know what you're doing, this is around a 3.5 hour long game thereabouts. If you're me and you're bumbling your stupid ass through this, it's closer to like, I think I put around 7-ish hours in it. So it's a decently sized game. There is not a lot of interactions between your character and other characters. You do get occasional ones, because most of the city isn't really interacting with newcomers, so you basically get to interact with two people. One person once, and one person a few times, and that's it. Because you don't actually get into the city proper. It's interesting. It turns into this more fantastical thing as there is some sort of weird artifact here, and people are thinking, oh, it might have infinite energy, and it might be alien, or might be a weapon. No one really knows. And you have to solve that kind of stuff as well while trying to find your uncle. And it's an interesting, weird, very, very fucking weird setup. Yeah. Any questions? Because I'm at a loss.
Nah, this one sounds pretty interesting. It clocks in at $25.99. If you pick it up before July 7th, you could save 15% at $22.09. But for $26, what do you think of Dimhaven, The Lost Source?
I'm 100% for this. If you didn't like Myst or any of its games that came afterwards, this may not end up being for you. But everyone else, I think you should totally get this. This was a great little game.
Very good. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is Dark Scrolls, developed by Doinksoft, published by Devolver Digital, released June 22nd on Switch and PC for $8.99.
set forth on your quest to insert goal here with one of the worthy yet quirky heroes in solo or co-op play, local and online. Hack, slash, and dodge through hordes of enemies and deadly traps in procedurally generated runs of handcrafted rooms and levels using each hero's unique attacks and abilities to your advantage. Pernell, what is Dark Scrolls?
So, Dark Scrolls is a 2D auto-scrolling roguelite game in which you control one of a number of madcap characters progressing from one into the other. Because, yeah, I don't really know what the plot of this game is either. I just know I'm doing stuff and there's a three-headed dragon involved. So, beginning of the game, you choose a character. You start out with three, but you are able to acquire more as the game progresses. And then once you've done so, you are immediately slotted into the first level, being a forested area, often mapped as heavily resembling of ghouls and ghosts or ghosts and goblins, classic SNES and NES games respectively, or arcade if you had that flavor. As the game plays, again, it auto-scrolls a little slowly, but not so slowly as to be bored, because they give you enough to deal with as you're progressing. And as this is occurring, monsters will appear on the screen, whether from the left or the right or from below you, because they can come from all over the freaking place. And as that happens, you want to murder them, because by killing them, they will drop money and sometimes hearts to replenish your health. How would you go about killing them? Well, every character has a basic attack that differs a bit between each character. For example, one character might throw an arching like axe. Another character might throw daggers straight ahead. Another might throw, you know, bouncy balls of mana. And then there's other characters that have their own types of attacks. Then there's the jump. And then there's a double jump. However, one interesting thing about this game is that the double jump actually works differently for all the different characters. Again, for example, one character, the one I preferred the most, Pigeon, when she jumps and then does her double jump, she launches a pair of daggers below herself that do more damage than the typical dagger she throws forward. So it's an interesting way to kind of do like a Mario-esque jump and attack in the air. Another character, their double jump might be air dash that goes either horizontally or vertically, which lets you blink through enemies. But also the annoying side of it is that you don't get an actual double jump. And if you're used to double jumping, well, better get used to that dash. So, but every character has a different form of that. And they all have their own achievements that you need to earn in order to unlock bonus accessories that they can earn, that can be equipped on them from the character select screen. At different intervals on the level, basically every level has a very similar flow. You start out, you're walking left to right, then you get to a segment where an arena battle occurs where you'll have a certain amount of time where you have to survive and outlast various enemies that are going to appear on the screen. Then you'll go on another scrolling section. Then after that, you'll get to a shop where you can spend your money to acquire various upgrades. I'll describe what the upgrades do shortly. And then lastly, you'll have one more stage segment that will culminate with a final boss. You beat the boss, you'll get a bunch of money, then go to a campfire where you will get a HP boost and a full heal, as well as access to a well where you can throw lots and lots of money down it to eventually unlock various goods. Then you'll move on to a sort of crossroads of sorts, and then the next stage. So, how to describe this game as far as... Oh, the last thing I need to mention before I talk about my feels for the game is the star system. So the star system in this game is pretty much what advancement feels like. So as you're moving throughout the levels, you are basically killing enemies. As you kill enemies, you'll increase a meter on a star gauge from 0 to 5 stars. Eventually, when you get to level 5 and max it out, you can press a button to do your character's ultra special attack. And they, again, differ per character. At which point, your star meter will reset to 0 and it will progress up again. However, when you go to a shop, you can spend money on items that can be used to be slotted into a slot representative of each of those star levels. So let's say, for example, you decide to buy fire, which will imbue your weapons with fire, and you slot it into star slot 1. That means whenever you reach star slot 1 by killing enemies, you'll get a temporary fire power-up that will imbue your weapons with fire. Incentivizes you to cycle through your star powers, use your super, and then reset back to 0 to do it again, because you want to keep getting access to all your cool powers. The one annoying thing, which will be probably one of the first concerns I have about this game, is the fact that money in this game is very tight because it's tied to so many things. For example, at the first crossroads, there's a character who wants you to pay him $1,200 in order to take the other route on the map. Otherwise, you're forced to take the bottom. To get $1,200, you pretty much have to go through the entire first level collecting as much money as possible and pretty much spending nothing on anything because you need to hoard your money just to give to him. First time I did it, I assumed, oh, okay, once I do that, that means it'll be unlocked for good. No, you got to do it every time you want to take that route. So if you intend to do that route, consider it as basically I'm not buying any upgrades for stage one. And then as you get through each level, of course, the upgrades become more and more expensive. Another thing that kind of bugged me was that when you do start unlocking additional items that can be available in the shop, which is done by multiple runs and getting currency to do so, you reach a point where the shop sells three things, but you don't really get to choose what goes there. So some of the things you might have found as being your favorite item to buy just don't exist anymore. And you have no way of knowing if it'll show up, which I guess is normal for roguelikes. But at the same time, when you get used to seeing like rapid fire show up in the shop and then just never shows up again, it's annoying. You kind of want your cool stuff back. But that's just something to point out there. And then, like I said earlier, just the fact that so many elements of unlocks and just advancements require you to have lots of money at any given time. Now, of course, as you play, you will get ways to earn money faster, such as, like, for example, the coin fairy. But it doesn't change the fact that for a while, things kind of start to feel like a slog. In addition to that, getting additional characters, which can be used beyond the initial three, can also have a similar feel where you might feel like it takes way too long to get more characters if you should find yourself thinking that way. But with that said, I find myself in a weird position because after becoming annoyed by the issue with the finances and feeling like after a certain point in the game, I can't even really afford to get any upgrades to my star powers, it didn't change the fact that I came to realize that as a game to play from time to time, it's a fair bit of fun nonetheless. I still enjoyed, you know, doing the levels, even if I felt like the level layouts or the rooms kind of started to repeat very quickly. I still had fun playing around with it. It just, if I played it ad nauseum, I find myself getting bored quicker. But if I take my time, a whole nother story. So fair bit of fun. Co-op is a mixed bag. So not bad, not great, but not bad either. When you go on the co-op, you choose a character. Also, for the record, only one person's game gets the bonus updates of like all the goods. So whether you play online or otherwise, one person's file getting the upgrades and yours, the other person doesn't. It's like, I know Clyde unlocked, we unlocked some characters on my friend's game. And then when I played it myself later, I had to unlock everything again. Yeah. So what happens is as you're playing the game, you could bump into each other and collide, which can cause a bit of an issue or some hiccups in a game that auto scrolls and can ultimately kill you if you get eaten by the screen. Or not eaten, but so much, but get, you know, smashed between the screen and like landscaping. But the thing that drove me a little nuts, and this could be an either or thing once you get used to it, is that once you die, you become a little spooky ghost. And the spooky ghost is on the game as a ghost until you beat the level. There's no way in the level to revive them. And while they are a ghost, they remain able to collide with you and cause bumping. So more than a few times while playing with my friend's son, he was pushing me back into enemies I was trying to get away from or knocking me into pits I would have cleared if he weren't in the way while I was making a jump. But on a benefit, though, you can also jump off of them for a sort of extra jump if you can coordinate to get let them use you as a stepping stone to get to higher levels. They get a weird blow attack, too, which does no damage to anybody, so I have no idea what the purpose of that is. Maybe to help destroy blocks. We didn't try that. They were too busy getting in my way when I was trying to jump. But all that is to say, it didn't ruin the game for me, but I wanted to mention it because I know a number of folks would absolutely be pissed off with that and it could make or break the purchase of this game for them. All in all, one thing I wish they would add also, if it comes up in a future update, even at the price point they mentioned, it'd be nice if there was more than one boss at the end of each section. It would definitely reduce some of the repetition that you feel redoing sections and always fighting the tree or the fish or whatever. So ultimately, I feel like this is a game that is serviceable. It's not bad, but it's not great either. It's not Doinksoft's best, but
it could be far worse than it is, and I won't lie and say that I didn't have any fun playing it, because I did have some fun playing it. And if you go into it knowing that this game is just meant to be a bit of dumb, bounce around, bullet mayhem fun for a little while, especially at the price point, I think you'll have a fine time with it too.
Cool. And speaking of that price point, it clocks in at $8.99. If you buy it, I'm not sure how long the sale's going. It doesn't say on Steam, but there is a launch bundle for $8.09 that also includes Gato Roboto and Gunbrella.
Oh, that's an easy buy. I'd go, if you can get that bundle, it's a buy it. If you can't get the bundle, it's a try it.
No, there we go. And with that, we are done. Big thanks to you two for being here. Big thanks to Adam for coming on, doing his thing. We're going to play some music from Blind to wrap up the show. So we have some good techno for Adam. He loves his We're boots and pants and boots and pants and boots and pants.
I see.
Indeed. All right. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
No, but like Adam said, go play Elden Ring.
Indubitably.
Boots cat. We'll be right back.